Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, currently in sunny Quinton, Birminghamshire, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire, who is literally, almost literally, about to fly to Denmark. Kieran, would you like to swap?
Can I think about that one, Kevin, if you don't mind?
Full disclosure, we are recording this on Tuesday evening, which almost guarantees that something important will happen tomorrow. Because Kieran will be at Stansted Airport. Because why, Kieran? Tell the people why. They need to know why you're going to be at Stansted Airport at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Because I've managed to find a flight for £6 to Denmark.
Yeah, which is great, Kieran. That's economical and very good. But who's paying for the flight to Denmark?
Somebody else. Because I've been invited to give a speech there. So, but I just can't. My Uncle Terry would be devastated if he knew that I wasn't managed to get a deal, because he was always a man for a deal.
Having said that, I think Uncle Terry would only be too happy. There's a lot of money flying around in Denmark. If a Danish football club were willing to fly you over there, I think Uncle Terry would be feet up first class, wouldn't he?
Very possibly.
It's Newsday. So let's ignore the fact that a huge, massive story will have broken between Tuesday and now. Our very first news story, though, Kieran, is that a lot of people are very suspicious people, Kieran, who think that UEFA's proposed changes to the Champions League looks like a backdoor to the Super League.
Yes, it's all kicking off between interested and vested interested parties with relations to the Swiss-style model and the fact that the Champions League is moving from 32 to 36 clubs in 2024. The clubs, and by this we mean the big clubs, want the changes to be based so that two clubs will get it on the basis of their 10-year coefficient in UEFA competitions, i.e. you don't have to win matches domestically, but if you do win matches in Europe, then that will be in your best interest. Whereas the leagues, remember, there are more than four countries in Europe, and this will come as a surprise to Super League club owners. The leagues say, well, why can't we have four more places going to elsewhere in Europe? Wouldn't it be great if, for example, a Scottish club was guaranteed participation in the Champions League from 2024 and a couple of other countries as well? And could we have another place potentially going to Portugal or France? So that's where we are. It looked as if the clubs were going to get their way. But I believe that there is a UEFA meeting going to take place relatively shortly, and people will be jabbing fingers at each other, and the Super League clubs will be trying to say that this will save football if they can qualify for the Champions League by not finishing in the top four. Nobody's. Whenever you say to them, doesn't the word champions in Champions League ever mean anything to you? They get very dismissive and change the subject very quickly.
Yeah, I like the idea that the upcoming UEFA meeting will be like a Carry On film. You're just the representatives from the English clubs will just be standing to one side going, they get so excited, don't they? The French and the Italians, they're jabbing fingers at each other. It's an interesting dynamic, Kieran, though, this, because there are people. On the face of it, it looks like some of the clubs in Europe are still jockeying to get the Super League ready to happen. But yet, as we've seen with the potential new owners of Chelsea, all the club owners here are bending over backwards to completely disassociate themselves from it, whilst at the same time being still contractually obliged to be part of it. So it's very strange. You can't help but suspect that somewhere along the line the Super League is going to happen, but it's almost like the English clubs will be saying, well, we've been forced into it. We don't like it, but what can we do? We signed the contract. We didn't read the small print.
Yeah, yes, you're absolutely right. And I think if the commercial deals and the broadcasting deals negotiated by UEFA are as good as they're presently claiming that they're going to be, then that will placate the Super League clubs for a few years, but they will be trying to work out a way around it. So their big fear is another Leicester City, club which has absolutely no right whatsoever in the views of the Glazers and John Henry and Stan Kroenke and co. Has absolutely no right to be in a Champions League place. And let's face it, these people don't care about football. They do care about the potentially up to £150 million a year that being in the Champions League can bring. And it's all, unfortunately, it's all to do with money. And our legacy fan, our notion of football as a romance at the start of August, and you've still got a chance of getting into European competition, is one that they want to squash altogether.
And also, Kieran, this sounds like an odd thing to say, but because the English clubs backtracked so quickly, it seems to me that there are still fans here who don't entirely know what the Super League was meant to be. And I know this because I was at a memorial service last night and I got asked this question, but my friend who died put a lot of money behind the bar, so it was way too late in the evening to give a sensible answer. But people still don't seem to know whether the Super League will replace the Premier League or these clubs will leave the Premier League, or whether this runs in conjunction with the Premier League as just a European league.
Yes, and the aim of Super League was to have a reduced size Premier League to allow the Super League clubs to play more games against themselves, right, potentially some games at weekends, and still have a domestic competition. And they wanted the best of both worlds. And the problem is we already know that there are huge gaps between the rich, or the very rich, and the moderately rich in the Premier League. But if you think about it, if we're going to allow the sneaky six to have more games themselves, and at the same time reducing the number of matches which would be played by the likes of Villa, Newcastle, Leeds, Leicester, West Ham, ambitious clubs, then that financial gap was going to grow even further, and the closed shop would just be increasingly reinforced.
Our next news story, Kieran. I'm sorry, I'll pause as I'm very hot. I'm staying in my mother-in-law's house. She's 85, so obviously it's like a sauna in here.
And not the type of sauna.
No, not that type of sauna. No, just a very hot, just a very hot place. You can see the radiators are literally glowing, and it's really warm outside. It's warm, and so one of these days it'll be so hot she'll take her hat off. I like to think this story is proof that the Premier League are listening. There's an ice cream van there. You don't get that in South London, do you? I like to think this is proof that the Premier League listened to our pod, because this is a story we talked about at some length last week. The Premier League is to cut ties with the law firm of the FA's interim chairman.
Yes. This is a classic story of you need to be seen to be behaving in the right way as well as behaving in the right way. So this all relates to Peter McCormack, whose law firm was, by all accounts, carrying out the vast majority of the owners and directors tests on behalf of the Premier League, whilst at the same time he was the interim chair of the Football Association. And that looks like a conflict of interest. I contacted one of our lawyer friends, and he said, it doesn't only look like a conflict of interest, it is a conflict of interest, and it's not very clever at all. And whilst McCormick's will no doubt, they will cite that they've got ethical walls The news is that I'm hearing from our sources is that McCormick's law firm, well, Peter McCormick, who was the person involved, he's the senior partner there, and it came as news to the Premier League that he was also carrying out the owners and directors test. So there's been, sometimes if you do have a conflict, or you think there could be an issue, the sensible thing to do is to be proactive and just hold up your hand and say, look, chaps, look, folks, there is a potential issue here. We have set up divisions within our organisation so that different parties don't talk to each other. Legally, there's nothing wrong. But you end up marking your own homework, and it doesn't look too clever.
Well, I mean, that's the worry here, Kieran. You don't like to think that this is just an example of the arrogance of a certain class of people who are, they do 3 years as CEO of one organisation, move on to another. But it sort of beggars belief that somebody didn't say, well, hang on a second, there is this really obvious conflict of interest here. The Premier League should have known about it, you'd think, you'd guess. And even McCormack himself, you'd think, would be sensible enough to say, well, there is a slight problem. My company, my legal firm does do fit and proper persons test, so maybe for the next 3 years I should sit out or another company should do that. But it's clear that hasn't happened.
Yeah, and that's why the Premier League is cutting ties themselves, because clearly they must feel slightly uncomfortable. And, there's more than one legal firm in the country.
Yes, of course. Yeah, but also it plays into the hands of those people in the Premier League who don't want an independent ombudsman, adjudicator, whatever you want, because the FA are putting themselves forward for that role, and clearly it's not a role they're fit for, is it, by the looks of things?
Yeah. Well, the FA's ability to make themselves look ham-fisted is quite regular. And very concerning.
The airline Jota Aviation, which is used by a number of Premier League clubs, has shut down, Kieran.
Yes, this is a funny one. There's sort of been a few press reports, and the reason why this is important is that the likes of Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, the two Premier League clubs from Manchester, they, by all accounts, use Jota Aviation. It's a small airline. It's got three aircraft, which it charters out. And fans might be saying, hold on, why can't Premier League clubs travel using other means of transport, which are better ecologically, better for the environment, and probably cheaper as well? And speaking to somebody who's involved in transport at one of those clubs, they said, in an ideal world, we'd like to be able to do that. But the problem is the British road system is full of delays, and also we don't want £800-900 million worth of assets sitting in a coach, even if it's a luxury coach, for hour after hour after hour prior to playing a match. So there's a time issue. If you take a look at the trains are quicker, but if you've got a Premier League team on a train, you're going to have a lot of fans who will be any chance of a selfie. Yeah, trying to break through, even if they, even if the clubs involved can manage to sort of get a carriage or two to themselves, you've still got the issues of getting on and off the station and being mobbed. So they have tended to use aircraft, but it looks like this organisation, Jota Aviation, and I went to take a look at their accounts. They're losing £60,000 a week. They've not published the account since 2020. And I always say that's a red flag when we're looking at football clubs, where it's a red flag for any organisation. So whilst it's not formally in administration from, according to Companies House, by all accounts, it has ceased trading. So they're going to have to look elsewhere. And there is an issue in the world of aviation, because you cannot find staff. It's an absolute nightmare. There's a limited number of qualified pilots. There's been no training of pilots, of course, during lockdown, and everybody's chasing after the same people.
You and I probably remember, every club has these anecdotal stories, but I do remember coming back for a game at Shrewsbury, and word got around at the Palace players were on the train, the same train, and everyone piled forward, but just went, oh, first class, we can't go in. It's just like, and then, of course, I remember people getting furious. Look at them fancy Dans travelling first class rather than stuck in standard like the rest of us. I like this story, Kira. Walsall have been on the receiving end of some stick and some very predictable jokes, I have to say, after they announced, after Walsall announced their sponsorship deal with Poundland, which I think is the closest association a football club has had with a supermarket since Brighton and Hove Albion started wearing Tesco carrier bags as their home kit.
Oh, very good. I've never heard that one before either, talking about predictable jokes. It was even better when we used to have the matching shorts.
Yeah, I know. Always, Kieran, always finish, even in training. That's what I'm told.
I can understand a little bit of light-hearted jesting taking place with regards to this, but my view is fair play to Walsall and fair play to Poundland, because first of all, they both got a lot of publicity on the back of this, which is good for all parties. That's what you're wanting to do in respect of a commercial deal. Walsall have also they've got their kits out for next season, and they do look pretty damn good as well. I've had a look at all three kits. You and I, we both are a bit of a sucker for a football kit. And it's not a gambling company. It's not a crypto company. Huh? It's not an NFT company. It's not a vice in any way. Good luck to Walsall. It's a UK-based business. So, the money's circulating within the country. At the lower leagues, I was looking at some data last week. The average front of shirt deal is around about 120k a year. So, it's not a huge amount of money, but it's going to pay the wages for one of the players. Yeah. So fair play to Walsall. And also, as an away fan, I like going to Walsall.
I love going to Walsall. The Arboretum in Walsall was wonderful. The art gallery is brilliant. It's got Noddy Holder's voice in the lift, which tells you which floor you're going to. Tells you what floor you're going to. But also, I mean, as you say, 120, however much, whatever the wags on social media are saying, Poundland has spent a lot more than a pound on this sponsorship. And you know what? With this vast amounts of the country are in financial crisis. So it's a brand that a lot of people in the West Midlands will recognise. So I think that's a very interesting deal from Walsall. A club, of course, which quite often gets overlooked because we talk about the northwest of England quite a lot, but Walsall won't thank us for saying this. But, of course, they're competing with West Brom, Wolves, Villa, Birmingham, all clubs in the higher leagues. So fair play to them. Sunderland's latest accounts are out, Kieran, and there are some interesting numbers, it says here.
Yes, because this is the first season that Sunderland have had without parachute payments since they were relegated from the Premier League in 2017. For me, the most eye-watering thing is, we've all had to take a bit of a pounding on the back of COVID, Sunderland's income is down 92% compared to where they were in the Premier League. They're losing £200,000 a week, big by League One standards. They can't even say, we're gambling and getting to the Premier League because they need to get out of League One first. In terms of their wages, £125 in wages for every £100 worth of income doesn't look too clever. The average wage is about just over £6,000 a week, which is more than double than that of the rest of the division on average. If you take a look at the Sunderland squad at the end of 2021, for a League One squad, it cost more than £17 million, which is over half of the total amount of squad value in the whole of League One, which begs the question, why on earth are they still in League One? They've got so much more financially than the other clubs, and they've now had three seasons there. And I think, we don't talk about football, but football decisions must have been pretty appalling in that division, made by senior management and the unusual characters that have been in the boardroom at that club.
Yeah, they certainly have attracted some unusual characters. They're playing Sheffield Wednesday in the playoffs, which is a huge game. Both of those legs will sell out more than sell out, and they could sell out twice. The odd thing, though, for fans of clubs in that division is that most of them won't want Sunderland or Sheffield Wednesday to be promoted, and certainly clubs that are coming up from League Two, like Forest Green or Exeter, will be desperate for Sunderland and Sheffield Wednesday not to go up, because that's a big payday for them in terms of match day income, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're both massive. Yeah, they've got huge away followings. So you can understand it from the perspective of the smaller clubs, because that they could sell out the away ends twice over in many of the stadia in that division.
Now, we talked on the last pod, Kieran, about Feyenoord of Rotterdam, of course, having trouble financing their new stadium and deciding to pull. Aberdeen are having the same sort of problems. They've revealed that their new stadium has increased by a lot of money, Kieran, hasn't it?
Yes. Aberdeen have been planning to move from Pittodrie for about 4 or 5 years. And the initial estimates of stadium cost was £45 million. And we know that inflation is unpleasant at present, but it's gone from 45 to 75 million. Mm. So, that's a 66% increase. And it does look like potentially a very, very attractive new stadium. But the reason is if you think about it, it doesn't matter what product you're making, everything's a combination of materials, labor costs, and overheads. And as far as the construction industry is concerned, the material costs element has gone through the roof. Getting hold of craftsmen is becoming more and more difficult, so therefore wages have gone up. And in terms of overhead, we all know gas, electricity, water through the roof as well. So it's keeping the chairman awake at night. Why are they moving from Pittodrie? It's he says that the ground's effectively he says it's landlocked. There's no room for expansion, and if Aberdeen want to compete at the very top level, and we know that Scottish football has been a duopoly for a long, long period of time. A new stadium with better facilities, especially for the hospitality areas, that would generate an extra £3 to £4 million a year. So that's where they are. Now, the council have said, well, we've got a plot of land which is not far from Pittodrie. We could come to some sort of an arrangement with you, because I think the council were planning something as well. But I'm not sure that Aberdeen want to go down that route. And of course, the longer and longer it takes to make a final decision, the higher the final costs of the new stadium. If I think about Brighton Stadium, that's 10 years old now. That cost £91 million. We thought that was a lot at the time, but I hate to think how much it would cost today.
Some of our younger listeners as well, Kieran, won't be aware that Aberdeen were an absolute powerhouse of Scottish football, weren't they, back in the late 70s, early 80s?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were brilliant. And I remember Gordon Strachan, Mark McGee, those type of players playing for them, and they were a delight to watch. And those were the days where European football used to be on terrestrial TV, and you would support Scottish clubs because they were Scottish clubs. Whereas now, I think when some of our clubs are playing in European football, I'm not necessarily overexcited if they win.
I also like the fact that wherever you go in Scotland, whatever town you go to, they all assume that Aberdeen's rolling in money. Aberdeen, just rolling in it. Because you mentioned gas and oil. They just say, they'll just put another pipeline in, gas it straight in. They all think that everyone's rolling in money in Aberdeen. But the potential there is huge, isn't it, for hospitality, because there are many multinational companies based in Aberdeen because of the oil and gas industry, aren't there?
Yeah, and we're recording this on Tuesday. BP have just announced their financial results, and I think it's fair to say nobody at BP is going to be selling the big issue.
I know. Funny enough, in the car driving up to Birmingham today, I had to calm Ali down when some minister for something or other said, no, it's not right to ask BP to pay extra tax on their huge profits, because otherwise how are they going to invest in the greener energy that we need in future to not being hocked to Russia? It's like, just make them pay the tax. I get made to pay my tax. You get made to pay your tax. Why isn't the same person at Fleetwood who phones me up getting cross phoning up BP saying, give us a bit more money? It doesn't work like that, Kieran, I don't know, but there you are. The NFT company Sportimon Go, which has commercial deals with Rangers and Hibs, appears to have ceased trading. Now, I'm interested in why Guy has written here, appears to have ceased trading. You either have or you haven't you?
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny one. I think we mentioned this recently on the show. And the reason why it looks like it ceased trading is that all of its social media accounts effectively disappeared. The website disappeared. And I think earlier today, in the last few hours, there has been some confirmation with regards to this. So the website effectively was ghosted and then sort of said, we ain't trading anymore. Now, you know, we had Football Index last year. We've had issues with some of Manchester City's commercial partners involved in this industry, and now it comes as no surprise. It's an unregulated, highly volatile, easily manipulated market. As far as NFTs are concerned, when John Terry brought out his NFTs, you know, the value tanked by 90%. Mm. When Liverpool, and let's face it, there is no sexier football brand than Liverpool at present. If Liverpool can't sell them, then there are going to be issues. And I asked Robert Smith of The Cure. He says, is this happening regularly? And he said, again and again and again and again and again and again and again, 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 again. And you can't get a better orator on the subject than that.
Indeed, Kieran, we've had this discussion before, because Akira are your favourite band and my wife's favourite band. In my view, again and again and again and again and again describes how often they write the same song.
Yeah, Sportimon Go, they have, I think they've got back of shirt sponsor deals with Rangers and Hibs, 2 year and 3 year deals again. And here the clubs are in a position. Yeah, we've used this phrase on a regular basis, blinded by the check.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody offers you money, you bank the check, you don't worry, you don't do a lot of due diligence. And there are also lots of people who use what is known as FOMO when it comes to NFTs and cryptocurrency. FOMO is fear of missing out. And where we are with the world of crypto, with the world of NFTs, my analogy would we would be we're in a similar position to the very late 90s and the rise of e-trading. And the thing is, for every Amazon, which has been spectacularly successful, there are 1,000 companies involved in when the internet boom took place in the late 90s. And effectively, you could if you walked into a bank with a goatee beard and cargo pants, you could and say, I'm creating a new website. The bank managers would just hand over money without asking any questions, without doing any due diligence, because they thought that the internet was the road to riches and everything would turn to gold, and it doesn't. So the problem we have with these industries is that when we look back in 10 or 20 years' time, there will be some very successful companies based in NFTs and cryptocurrencies in all probability, but for every success, there's going to be 1,000 failures. And by partnering with failures, and what these industries are trying to do is that they are trying to get credibility and legitimacy by partnering with football clubs. And it means that some people are going to lose a lot of money.
What I would suggest, Kieran, is if you walk into a bank with a goatee beard and cargo pants, the bank's probably in Brighton. but teams, Kieran, are still boarding the crypto buses, despite the fact that people are starting to get uneasy about the whole thing, despite the fact that companies are going bust, despite the fact it's completely unregulated, teams are still getting on board. Atletico Madrid, my son's least favourite team by a country mile, partly because of the way they play football and partly because he had an accumulator go down because they didn't get enough corners in the second half. They've signed a 200 million euro sponsorship deal with Whalefin, who are a crypto investing app.
Yeah, and you know, we say blinded by the check. Well, 200 million euros, that's being blinded a bit like in Men in Black. Will Whalefin be around in 5 years? Because this is a 5-year deal. We've got absolutely no idea. Is it a huge sum of money? Yes, it is. Atletico Madrid will say, well, it's legal. It's the biggest. Yeah, it's the, they're the biggest players in town. There's potentially we're going to see Liverpool, you know, get replace Standard Chartered with one of these organisations as well, and therefore, you know, what's the downside? And from the club's point of view, there's not a huge amount of downside unless these organisations do go bust. And we saw that caused short term problems for Nottingham Forest and QPR last season when Football Index went bust. But they'd already received the money for that year's sponsorship. They just had to sort of try to find a replacement for the remainder of the deal. So Atletico Madrid will do this, and they say, well, you know, what's the problem? The problem is it's a gateway to gambling because. The companies themselves never say we are an investment. They never say that we are a glorified Ponzi scheme. But they will say, well, we're just part of the digital metaverse, to use the exact words. And that they trade in Bitcoin, crypto tokens, and this was the surprise bit: real money,
real money,
real money. Yeah. So, and I presume that Atletico Madrid have asked for payment in real money because their players will want payment in real money. And, you know, the electricity company will want payment in real money unless we do all decide that we're going to embrace cryptocurrency as a means of paying for goods and services.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, Kieran. Kieran, there's two questions off the back of that. Are you speculating about Liverpool's sponsorship with Standard Chartered being replaced by a cryptocurrency, or is that something that is going to happen?
It is speculation. There has been comment upon it in the media. My understanding is that Standard Chartered have done very well from Liverpool, but they feel that they could have been promoted a bit more, that there's one or two grumbles coming from the sponsors' end. And also Liverpool are asking for a lot more money to renew this partnership. And that's fully understandable. You know, Liverpool are, as we know, potential quadruple. Yeah. They are playing magnificent football. Jurgen Klopp's just extended his contract to 2026, and he's a brand in his
Absolutely,
own right.
Yeah.
He's got so many things going for him in that he's intelligent, articulate, funny, and he's an absolute delight from a marketeer's perspective. So you can see why Liverpool are going to try to extract maximum dollar from they'll probably give Standard Chartered first refusal, but the stories in the press is that there is an alternative from the crypto space.
But there's also a link there, Kieran, to the Walsall story earlier on, because I know exactly what Poundland is. I know where my local Poundland is as well. Standard Chartered, I'm not entirely sure what they do. I mean, I see their name all the time on Liverpool shirts, as do many, many millions of Liverpool fans across the world. But they're not a brand that you imagine the fans themselves would be buying into. So, in terms of, most Liverpool fans or most football fans probably aren't using Standard Chartered, are they?
That certainly domestically, I'd agree with you, but Standard Chartered are an Asian-based bank, and Liverpool have a huge fan base in Asia, and it's targeting that particular market. So Liverpool and that's why Liverpool tore that area, because that they have a commitment in their contract that once every X years that they will go to where Standard Chartered are strong.
And the other question about Whalefin. And I think this is a question many of our listeners will be asking as well. They're an app. Where are they getting the 200 million euros to pay this sponsorship deal up front?
Well, they'll be getting it from going to the markets and raising money from the debt markets and the equity markets, private equity and so on, by saying we are one of the bigger players in the world of NFTs and crypto, please give us some money. And again, yeah, what I was saying earlier, there are parallels with sort of the tech boom at the end of the 90s, where the banks themselves weren't sure which of these companies were going to be successful. So therefore, they sort of took a portfolio approach and said, well, if we give quite a bit of money to 10 of them and two of them are successful, we can end up very rich on the back of this. And therefore, they're quite willing to provide money for these organisations.
And I think as well, we should say, Kieran, we're becoming increasingly aware, and I'm addressing this comment to people who tweet us about this on a regular basis, there is an ecological aspect to the creation of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and whatever, and we are investigating that, and hopefully we will get somebody on to talk about that, because I think it's something that a lot of football fans are not aware of. Now, Gary Neville, Kieran, you know, old habits die hard. He loves defending. We know that. especially loves defending Man United when Jamie Carragher's laughing in his face. But he's been defending Salford City this week. And in particular, Gary Neville has defended Salford City's spending policy after it was revealed the club is losing £91,000 a week and missing out on the playoffs, as they have just done. Would not have helped. Sky, I'm not sure Gary Neville will be entirely happy with the Sky director, because they showed the Salford game live and cut immediately to Gary Neville in the executive box, desperately. Not desperately, but he was phoning somebody up. Could have been his mate, who knows. But according to Sky, it was a desperately anxious text about them not getting in the playoffs. But £91,000 a week, Kieran, to me, for a League Two club, seems like an awful lot of money to be losing a week.
Yeah, and I'd hate to reveal who was the person on Twitter that revealed that they were losing £91,000 a week.
Was it somebody whose club we might be visiting in the near future, Kieran?
No, it was me. Oh.
I'm sorry, I just assumed it was Andy Holt, knowing Andy Holt's relationship with Gary Neville. No, it was you. No, you talked about Uncle Terry early on. What Uncle Terry be? Uncle Terry, if you could, you can't, obviously, when you're buried in concrete under a flyover, it's hard to turn in your grave, but he would be attempting to turn. What a grass. That's very, sorry, Kieran.
What a grass, exactly. Yes.
We share the same Twitter feed. I should have known that, Kieran. Sorry, it's been a busy couple of days.
yes, so Salford City, they've lost £4.5 million, £91 a week, sorry, £91,000 a week, and Gary Neville has said, and I can understand where he's coming from, we've come from Tier 8 and we've got as far as League 2. It costs money. We've invested in infrastructure, although infrastructure costs don't really go through against profits, Gary. I think you need to check your accounts there. And then he was sort of saying, well, you know, we've helped some regeneration in the area. Yeah, that's fine. I think Salford's crowds have sort of, they're struggling to find a fan base and struggling to find what is their sort of their genuine level, because they've come so far, so fast, so quickly. Then he was sort of saying, well, you know, we could have spent money on, you know, on flash houses and fast cars. Well, you probably have done that as well, because When someone, and I won't say who this was, went into the accounts in a bit more detail, they found that the total cost of the shares issued by Salford City Football Club was 10 full pounds, Kevin. Wow. 10 pounds, wow. No more than that, of which 5 are owned by Peter Lim, the Singapore investor, and 5 are owned by the Class of 92. And again, that's fine. And then he says, yeah, well, we've also lent money. So yeah, I dug it out. A bit of a dog with a bone. But the Class of 92 Limited have lent Salford City, I think it's £245,000, a substantial sum of money. Nobody's denying that. But somebody has lent the club 13 million quid. And it says it's a shareholder loan. Now, given that Gary Neville's a director, you'd think it would be a director loan. So is it Gary Neville? I think highly unlikely, yeah. Especially if my understanding is that given that he's not bought around since 2002, he's probably not going to go and lend the club 13 million quid. I can't see his brother doing it either. Scholesy, no chance. You know, Scholesy, he still quibbles over the price of a pair of socks. Ryan Giggs probably got other things on his mind at present, and Nicky Butt and David Beckham. Yeah, David Beckham could do it, but David Beckham, I don't think he's really bought into the class of 92 significantly. So it's highly likely that the £13 million has come from Peter Lim. So where are we? We are dealing with somebody that's got no emotional investment in the club, is lending huge sums of money to underwrite these losses, which he's perfectly entitled to do. You know, I support a club which is underwritten by a guy that does have has put a huge sum of money in. You've got investors at Palace, you know, in the likes of Steve Parish, who's helped save the club. So you know, there's no doubt that people do that. But when you don't actually support the club, because Peter Lim also owns a club in Spain, what happens if he says one morning, Why am I doing this? What's in it for me? Especially, you know, we're in League Two for the, you know, the third or fourth season on the trot. So therefore, you know, how are we doing compared to other clubs? Well, Salford City are the biggest loss makers in League Two in 2021. They were the biggest loss makers in League Two in 2020. And yeah, that does result in some criticism. Yeah, and Gary Neville has been very articulate with regards to the finances of the game. He's a big supporter of the independent regulator and so on. And what he appears to be saying here is, well, provided we put money in and we don't take it out, then it's not a problem. But if you're going to do that, that's great. Put money in the form of shares rather than loans, because loans have to be repaid. That's the nature of a loan.
When we are in Accrington next week, talking to Andy Holt, the owner of Accrington, Salford City will be the last question I ask him, because I'm worried I'm worried if it's the first one, we could be there for quite some time.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager, or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Salford City are a really interesting club because they weren't formed until during the Second World War, and they were hugely successful as an amateur club, hugely successful in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And now they've become a professional club. You kind of think League One is the highest they'll ever go. So it makes you wonder whether Peter Lim is involved in this as a vanity project because it gets him in touch with Gary Neville and David Beckham and Paul Scholes rather than because he has an affection for Salford City.
Yeah, I think that's an accusation that has been made. Yeah, we genuinely don't know the answer to that. Certainly the reaction on social media depends on whether or not you like Gary Neville. It's certainly an opportunity for his critics to beat him over the head with a stick about it, because he has been very vocal in respect to a lot of issues. But personally, I think he's spoken a lot of sense with regards to owner investment. And even though he grumbles about Manchester City, he acknowledges that Manchester City have increased the competition at the top of the Premier League, because it was Manchester United or Arsenal for so many years, and you know, had it not been for Abramovich and then Mansour, we would potentially still be in that duopoly today.
Yeah, I'm going to potentially lose listeners here, Kieran. I'm in the camp. I like Gary Neville. I've been in his company a couple of times. He's like all of us. He gets tied up in knots sometimes. All football fans are hypocrites, really. Advocate certain views while acting in a different way. But I think in general, he's on the side of the angels when it comes to football finance and the way football's run out. And our last two stories, Kieran, are sort of linked. First story is that the rules protecting what are the so-called crown jewels of sport are to be rewritten, so the BBC and other terrestrial channels don't lose the rights to World Cups and Olympics in the future.
Yes. So the crown jewels, so we've got the World Cup, the Olympics, the FA Cup final. It's going to be extended to the Women's World Cup and the Women's European Championships as well, which is all good. The Grand National. There are things changing in the world of media, some of which I'm not particularly a fan of, if they go through. But what's going to happen is that BBC, ITV, Channel 4 and Channel 5 are going to have first refusal in relation to these events. And the government has said that they must be available to at least 95% of the population on a free-to-air basis. And some people say, well hold on, we don't know what's going to happen. What happens if the BBC becomes a subscription service? Yeah. We genuinely don't know. I think there has been consternation that I think Discovery did acquire the rights to some big tournaments, but they then had to effectively give them that they couldn't use them themselves on the Discovery Plus channel. They had to then sell them to the BBC and ITV and so on. So, The world of broadcasting is becoming increasingly complex. The way that we consume TV clearly has changed, but sport is still the single biggest. Did you see that last night? In the country, and if you talk to people in the US as well, you talk to broadcasters there. They say if you take a look at the top 20 most viewed events in the year, 18 of them will probably be sport. Yeah. And the thing about sport is that you watch it live.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm watching, I'm currently going through Better Call Saul and Ozark on Netflix, brilliant programs, but I watch them when it suits me, rather than any way around. Sport, you've got to be there. It's the closest you have to continued sort of live broadcasting. It's sort of old school broadcasting, and I think the government is trying to do a little bit there to protect the terrestrial broadcasters.
Yeah, and we were talking last week, Kieran, with some bemusement about the fact that Channel 4 had acquired the rights to show England's Nations League games, but now they've won the rights to show all England games until 2024, including European qualifiers. How are they affording that? Now, I would, of course, ask Nadine Dorries, the Culture Secretary, but she wouldn't have the foggiest clue. But it's a strange one, Kieran, because it's ITV and England seems to have been quite a happy marriage for the last couple of years. You'd imagine Channel 4 wouldn't be able to come anywhere near outbidding ITV for football.
Yeah, this does seem a strange one. I mean, perhaps ITV have felt that they've either overpaid or that the level of advertising was lower than expected. If it is going to be Channel 4, you've been involved in Channel 4 cricket, weren't you?
No, I might have been. Was I? I was a guest on a Channel 4 cricket show once. But yeah, so I was involved. Yeah, yeah.
But when Channel 4, when Channel 4 had cricket, they did bring a few new ideas to it.
They did. And their evening highlight show with Mark Nicholas was very good.
Yeah. And you know, could they do the same? Because football has become quite stale. You know, we know what's going to happen. Can we do more things sort of in terms of the cameras at the match? What about before and after? Because the same three faces talking about the same subjects to the same, you know, to the same broadcasters, it is becoming a little bit predictable. And I think that's why the likes of Roy Keane in his Panto role have become quite amusing, because it's just becoming a little bit bland. So you know, Channel 4 have a track record of innovative broadcasting, and perhaps they could bring something there. I'm not saying combine it with Naked Attraction, sort of half time, but we have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'm really worried now, Kieran. I did an entire three series of Channel 4 cricket and I've forgotten about it. I hosted a book launch the other night for a friend of mine, Jim Piddock, Hollywood actor. He was in Best of Show, and it was lovely. But a very earnest gentleman came up to me afterwards to ask for my photograph. So I said, "Oh, you know, football fan?" He went, "No," and I kind of tried to narrow down why it was. He said, "No, I loved you at that sci-fi quiz you hosted on Radio 4," and like literally, I had to Google it myself it's a very short-lived science fiction quiz called "To Boldly Go" that I hosted on Radio 4, in which Bill Bailey played the out of sort of spaceman scoreboard, very weird, of which, and then suddenly I remembered that there was one night when it all kicked off, because, and the reason it didn't get a second series is because every single person in the audience knew more about, every time I gave the answer to a question, you just heard this muttering from the audience, because you were going, "No, that was series two, actually. That wasn't Lieutenant Uhura." I know, but we had the two guests one night were the rival computers in Red Dwarf, Hattie Hayridge and Norman Lovett, and it just kicked off because half the audience hated Hattie Hayridge as the computer and half of them hated Norman Lovett as a computer. But I know, but then I just really worried me that I'd completely forgotten hosting an entire series on Radio 4. So I'm going to have to go and Google cricket Kevin Day now to see what happens. Anyway, I know what's happening next Tuesday, Kieran, on May the 10th. Because as we've just alluded, we are going to the Wham Stadium, the home of Accrington Stanley, for our second ever live podcast. And we're looking forward to it very much. Tickets have nearly sold out. But if you want to try and get a couple, you can click on the link in this episode description or go to the Price of Football Twitter page. If you'd like to make a small contribution to our always free to air podcast, then that would be kind of you. Please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have a question for our weekly questions pod on Monday, email questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, folks, thanks for the feedback. Thanks for keeping us in check. we don't quite have Trekkies listening to the show, but I was corrected in relation to the question about replica shirts and Umbro by one of us, which is absolutely brilliant, because it's great that you know more about us. And apparently Umbro did do the replica shirts, but they didn't do the England badges on them because they didn't have the rights to the badge.
Ah, right.
Thanks very much to our listener there.
I've got some bad news for you as well, Kieran, because they don't call themselves Trekkies either. They call themselves Trekkers.
Oh,
I know, it's like bird watchers and twitchers. They get very antsy about these things. So it's a strange old world we live in, Kieran, isn't it?
It is indeed. So if you want to support the show, Patreon for as little as £1 a month. You can come and see us next Tuesday at Accrington. We'd love to see you. Tickets are just a tenner plus a small booking fee, which is nothing to do with us. And the last show was a complete blast. We had a whale of a time. If you talk to anybody that was there in the audience, they had a fantastic time to do. We'll chat afterwards. We'll be in the bar. And Coley's bar at Accrington looks absolutely fantastic. I think it's cost about £2.5 million to build. It was opened by our very good friend Tracy Crouch recently. It'll be a whale of a time. If you want to support the show in another way, the way that you can do that is to go onto your podcast app And if you can give us a review, give us 5 stars if you think we're worth it. We do put a lot of effort into the show. And if you want to give us a review and to put some written comments, it doesn't matter what you write. You could even say you'd rather have the show presented by Albert Tatlock and Keir Starmer. And that would probably make myself and Kevin feel quite good, because I suspect the ratings would plummet. But it would stop, you know, every time myself and Kevin asked producer guy for a pay rise, he said, I can always get somebody else to do the show, you know. And let's face it, I've got the list is long enough, and that might turn it back in our favour.
Yeah. Who did the Albert Tatlock song? Was that Half Man, Half Biscuit?
No, it was the Skids.
Oh, Skids. Oh, my God. Yeah, cool. And thank you for mentioning that Tracy Crouch opened the bar in Accrington, because I think that might have to be the first thing I talk about when we do the pod next week for 5 minutes. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The price of football. Price of football.